I can tune the capacitor that is created by that, and tune the antenna to the frequency of choice. So I said that was marvelous. Inductive reactance and capacitive reactance could be regulated by that, and you don't need any wire at all. Back to you.
Well, but the problem is, in order to do that, you have to physically change the antenna from top to bottom, which could be a very long distance. So can you imagine you're working some station and you decide to QSY to a little bit to the right or a little bit to the left, and you check it out and it's now out of tune? So you're going to spend the next 2 hours to modify the reactance, the capacitive coupling between each segment in a way that's not easy to reproduce unless you kind of leave marks behind. So it's an interesting scientific curiosity, but people don't even like to retune their magnetic loops, noch besser to kind of twist three-dimensionally, a 10-segment series of carbon tubes. I don't think so. Also, he mentions in the same video that he tried collapsing them all down and they worked fine, which I don't believe. So you got a guy that's not really believable in some cases, and a interesting, bizarre design that most lazy hams wouldn't touch with a 10-foot pole, because I think this requires a 20-foot pole.
I agree with you. I wouldn't spend the time to fight with that. Now, question, what is the reason that the microwave oven frequencies are at 2.45 gigahertz? Anybody could serve the answer?
B2BXO.
Yes, Frank.
I think Wesley's question is, why do microwave ovens operate at 2.45 gigs, or am I misunderstanding it?
No, you're not, Frank. That's the question.
Roy, correct me if I'm wrong. I think I've seen in a number of places over the years that the reason... And I always assumed that the reason was because the microwave oven is a resonant cavity, and that's the frequency it was resonant at. But I've seen in some other places that the microwave oven will actually work at almost any HF frequency down to HF, supposedly. So I don't know how you get a small cavity at that frequency, but... What I recall reading is that the main reason is that that's where the microwave companies could get permission to run them. That's the ISD, the unintentional emitter, whatever the heck they call it, ISD, Industrial Scientific Device Standards. Do I have that right, Roy? Go ahead.
AC2GS. Yeah, you got it absolutely right. 2.45 is a very popular frequency because you don't need a license to operate on it. So certainly microwaves, which should be properly shielded and shouldn't kind of leak too much, RF can use it. Our Wi-Fi has two major bands, 2.4 and 5 gigahertz, because 5 gigahertz is another frequency that doesn't require a license. A Bluetooth operates at 2.4, so there's a lot of things that operate on 2.4. If you ever was able to open your microwave oven while it was transmitting, it would screw up your Wi-Fi and your Bluetooth and a bunch of other things going on. But that's the reason why. There's some people who believe that there's a resonant frequency for water molecules, and it just heats them up, and that's a good frequency. But that's not real. As you sort of mentioned, as far as the cavity, any RF with proper energy will heat water molecules. Anything that's movable that has a dipole moment will be shaken and vibrated by RF waves. So, you know, for all intents and purposes, a microwave could have been 1 gigahertz, and it would probably be almost as effective in heating water in it.
Yeah, I'm sure you know that the water hole is something like 1.4 gigs. Go ahead.
Yeah, but you don't necessarily have to tune it to any molecule's resonance. It's simply a matter of shaking everything with a dipole moment. If it was electrically neutral, if it was a perfect, you know, thing that had absolutely no dipole moment, you could expose it to RF and wouldn't get you very far. But thankfully, water molecules have dipole moments. Just need to kind of grab them and shake them by them.
Yeah. So it doesn't have to be anywhere near the so-called water hole frequency then, which, as I said, I think is 1.4 or something gigs. I may be way off on that. If I remember correctly, though, that the dipole moment thing does not work well with ice because of the crystal structure, and that it's extremely hard to melt ice with a microwave oven. Go ahead.
Yes, that's quite true. The ice still has dipole moments, but you've changed from a liquid to a solid, and so it's much more difficult to shake an embedded solid like ice. You could take an ice cube and you can stick it in the microwave, and you can have a cup of the same volume of water, and the ice will melt a little bit maybe, but the water will come to a boil, again, because it's in the liquid phase. So it's the dipole moment that gives you the opportunity to shake it as long as it's free from its frozen matrix. The ice is embedded in a matrix, so that it requires a lot more strength to kind of move it around. Stuff in water is just sitting there, and it's very easy to shake it.
Yeah, and I take it the term dipole moment in physical chemistry, which I think is what it is, that has a very different meaning than what we refer to as a dipole in amateur radio, am I correct?
Well, it's not terribly different. It means that there are two things, and there is a difference in electrical potential between those two things. When we talk about dipoles, we tend to talk about antennas and having two legs. When people talk about dipole moments of molecules, there are different areas in the molecule that are a little bit more positive and others that are a little bit more negative, and that tell us a lot about a lot of things. One of the things that always fascinated me was neutrons, right? You know, those neutral particles inside the nucleus of many atoms is a compound item. It's not a fundamental particle. It's made up of two down quarks and an up quark. And the way they got insight into that is that neutrons have a dipole moment internally, which means it's not just one thing that's neutral. It's three things that are either positive or negative and that cancel each other out to the outside world. But internally, there's an area that's more positive, an area that's more negative, and by actually being able to measure the dipole moment of a neutron, they were able to infer that it's a more complicated structure than, say, an electron is a fundamental particle. There's no things making up an electron, but there are three things making up a neutron. So that's my great story about dipole moments in neutrons and in molecules.
Yeah, That is interesting. Yeah, I just saw that as a trivia question somewhere about the discovery of the neutron, I think, in 1932. That is interesting, Roy. And I just wanted to make a contact. I kind of tuned in just as you were talking about, I think, the German-made umpteen-thousand-dollar radios. I just wanted to, if I may, I'd like to make a comment about what I think is going on there. Go ahead.
Sure, Frank.
Yeah, and Wesley can... will probably jump down my throat if I'm totally off base on this. Since he seems to know something about, I suspect knows a lot about military, European military electronics. My guess is that these multi-thousand dollar radios are really being marketed to NATO militaries, who just like U.S. military can really be stoked. Reminds me a little bit of the... Collins radios, the KWM-1, the KWM-2, et cetera, that were being sold to the military was buying by the thousands in the Vietnam era. And they put them on the ham market, and most hams, of course, didn't buy them. Hams didn't buy $2,000 radios in those days. And I remember seeing, it was in QST a couple of years ago, that came out, the so-called, I forget what the NT2, I think it was, the Novice Crystal Frequency Control Adapter for the KWM-1 or KWM-2 that was marketed, that probably nobody ever bought in the amateur community, was actually... built for the military to use the aircraft on the U-2 spy plane, so they could stick the radio in a cubby hole in the back somewhere, and it was stuck on crystal control frequency. I think the frequency was for Gary Powers to use when he was over Russia. Of course, we all know how that flight worked out. Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't know. Hilberling is not, I mean, I know it from the radio that they produce. I don't know if they're a big military contractor. I was talking to someone just probably today about how the amateur radio market is not a highly profitable one. So invariably, you're going to find products that are related to more profitable ventures. A lot of communications systems make their profit with federal military or intelligence contracts. Others have a big successful commercial radio branch that brings home most of the money. And so I wouldn't consider it unusual that they would try and, you know, if something wasn't selling as much as they thought it might, to offer it to hams. But, you know, as you mentioned, the chances are hams, unfortunately, I love all my fellow hams. We're kind of a cheap group of people. We really don't like to waste a lot of money. So other than maybe nationalist Germans who have a lot of money to throw away on a Hilberling, I don't know of anyone, I've never kind of bumped into anyone on the air who has a Hilberling. A lot of people have an ICOM 7300, but I haven't yet reached one person with a Hilberling.
Interesting. This company also makes Q-switch drivers, amplifiers, various, from 300 watts to 2 kilowatts. The triplexers, some special accessory power supplies and combiner splitters. Back to you.
Okay, but I don't think they do military communications. I think they're mostly industrial, commercial, and amateur radio related sales.
That is correct. What I see is GPS antenna, similar distributor, highly stable reference. oscillator, UHF satellite signal amplifier. So that's something from their special equipment product. And they go to amplify. Of course, everything looks so absolutely amazingly catching eye. It's like something you would dream in your dream to see. And they have a number of amplifiers, really humongous one and a small one, whatever you want. Now, I assume that some of them use frequency 13.85 megahertz, which is the commercial frequency for any kind of devices used for heating, inductive heating or whatsoever. But anyhow, and I have plenty of those devices in my lab as well. But that's what they do. Back to you.
Okay, let's pause a second and give Frank an opportunity if he wants to say something. Because you have to keep in mind that Frank and other people are on echoing.
Yeah, very good. That is interesting. You got to wonder if they're not selling them to the military. It's possible they're selling them to the military under another brand, so we just don't know about it, Wesley. But, yeah, maybe some of the Germans are buying it. Maybe the guy from Array Solutions, I forget the number. I think it's... I could probably look it up. DK0NO. I don't remember the guy. Paul has absolutely monster antennas on top of the factory. That's the kind of guy I can envision buying those radios. In fact, I think he you probably know who I mean. I think he actually distributes them. But yeah, I don't see what the business model there in terms of how they're making money on it. If they're not selling them to the military. Maybe on the down low, because the ham market just isn't big enough, as you say. Anyway, it's interesting. Go ahead, Roy.
You know, it's possible AC2GS. By the way, it's possible that it's thing done out of love. A lot of people who are in the amateur radio commercial business kind of do it primarily because they love amateur radio. And, you know, this might be a guy who is a really good electrical engineer who thought that he could out-design everyone, and he came up with this design. By the way, it's been around for at least 8 years. As far as I am aware, it has not been modified ever so slightly. And, you know, the last 10 years of radio technology have been rather exciting. There's been an incredible move to software-defined radios. I think that this is an analog design through and through. So, you know, again, it's for a good German, conservative, well-off guy. You know, guy with a couple of million euros in the bank or whatever. So, you don't hear much about it. They don't advertise it. Well, and I don't know, maybe they advertise it in German amateur radio magazines. But, you know, you just see it occasionally because of the price tag. And, you know, my sense of aesthetics is different. It has very, very sharp corners. I almost think that you probably could cut yourself on the damn thing. And, you know, it's built like a tank. It's probably sturdy as a tank. It probably weighs almost as much as a tank. So it wouldn't be my cup of tea, but, you know, someone from the fatherland, I don't know, maybe they like that.
If it's built with like that, which means built to be very survivable, it does sound to me like it's really a military radio. I know you're saying it's not, and I get that. Maybe it was intended to be a military radio, and because it was analog, it was obsolete, and they couldn't sell it. Anyway, but you gotta wonder why radio, HF radio at that price is built like a tank. It was built for the amateur market, but I guess they sold. I guess if you said it's prestige and some amateur with a factory to do it wanted to show it off and show it can be done. There's a term for that in marketing. I'm not remembering right now, but just to kind of show off what he could do. Okay.
I would like to go with a few more things about that 2.45 gigahertz, if you don't mind.
Okay, I just want to add that maybe Frank was making a proof of concept. I've kind of tried to do a lot of things as a proof of concept, so that's the term that comes to mind. But okay, Wes, if you want to tell us more about 2.45.
Yeah, that requires, because we have a CAMIT also here. But, unfortunately, and I say unfortunately, the most common answer is that 2.45 frequency was chosen for microwave ovens because it aligns perfectly with water resonance frequency. That means that the water molecules in your food absorb the microwave energy efficiently, leading to faster and more uniform heating. And then if I was trying to follow this kind of answer, then I would say, what is the resonance frequency of liquid water? And if we're talking about distilled water that is not conductive and cannot be treated any other way as the insulator or maybe a dielectric, what the heck is that? And what kind of nonsense is that? And then if I go further with that, from mechanics, from classical physics, water has three vibrational modes. There is the vibrational frequencies associated with those, but they are not really oscillations like a mass or spring, which be familiar with seeing. So I'm trying to read what I see right now. So water can be excited rationally by 2.45 gigahertz. So the rational behavior of the water as a single molecule in the gas phase is very complicated. I mean, nonsense. Could anybody just make some simple, nice explanation for the people who understand radio waves? Back to you.
Well, Wesley, if you ever have any time to waste, Google that question. And you will see that incorrect question is repeated over and over and over again. It's rather amusing. I made a comment that someone asked a question about EchoLink, I think, 2 weeks ago. And I asked the guys who wrote it and run it, and I found out by surprise that the AI answer was, for the first time, correct, because I hate the Google's AI. It's wrong 60% of the time. You never quite know when it gets it right, so it's practically worthless. But if you type in, what's the resonant frequency for water, it'll tell you 2.4 gigahertz. So AI screws things up again.
Of course, it's a nonsense. We're talking about a piece of wire. The piece of wire, in order to resonate, has to represent the length of the wavelength of the frequency at 2.45 gigahertz. And we're talking about the water. If the water is salted and acts as a conductor, it has to have a certain properties that allow that water to resonate at given container. Am I right? And Tracy.
Well, resonance is kind of a different kind of topic. I think the lowest frequency of electromagnetic waves that interact in a resonant sort of way is something like 22 gigahertz. But nevertheless, you don't really need to have any kind of a resonant frequency. As long as you're dealing principally with food products that contain water in a liquid form that have a dipole moment, RF of any frequency, the higher the frequency, the more energy it'll kind of jiggle it. But any frequency will heat up if you expose it to things that have a dipole moment and that are not frozen as a solid. So that's a good description of what food amounts to. So that's the whole thing. You could double the frequency, you could half the frequency. That oven is still going to heat up your, defrost and heat up whatever the hell you're doing. It's just the nature of the things that we put in microwaves. There are some things you can put in a microwave that we mentioned earlier, like ice, where it's not going to have much of a effect. Not because of the dipole moment factor, but because it's immobilized by solid bonds and crystal lattices and such.
PH with a comment.
Sure, John.
I know in radio astronomy they often speak of the water hole as a range of frequencies in the 2.4 gigahertz range, I believe, where it is unusually quiet. Because of absorption by water molecules that are, you know, in space, they speak of that around that frequency as the water hole. Go ahead.
I don't think it's 2.4 though.
Well, I think it's around that frequency. I may be wrong, but I know there is a frequency range where the astronomers do speak of the water hole, that is in radio astronomy. It might not be around 2.4 gigahertz, but to get to Wesley's point, resonances can occur in a lot of different ways. For example, some of these time bases where they use rubidium, it's because the rubidium atom absorbs very heavily at a certain frequency, and they use that as a standard. Or I think the same thing is done with cesium to generate, you know, a frequency standard for high accuracy clocks. Go ahead.
WS2 and.
Yes, Paul, recognize. I just want to mention that the water hole is 1420 to 1720 megahertz. Go ahead, Paul.
What Frank said, 1.42 gigahertz. So he had that a while back. And astronomers love that one because they feel... That's going to be clear all throughout the universe. They'll just hear that one frequency. If somebody's going to be transmitting intelligent communication, they believe it will come through on 1.42. Let's hope they're right someday. Back to you.
Well, you saw the first season of Three Body Problem, so I'm a little bit, you never quite know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but yeah, 1.42 gigahertz to 1.72 gigahertz is the water hole, so it's not really that close to 2.4.
I think they used that on the movie Contact when that first came out. Back to you.
I think it could be explained this way. We have a photon that goes from the sun to the earth and hit the molecules of atmosphere. It deposits its energy on the molecules and hits the molecules of the air. So the same story is, okay, we have a 2.45 gigahertz frequency, which is good for a certain space enclosed inside of the microwave, and that is a photon that is hitting the foot and is depositing the heat on its energy on that foot, and that's why it's heated. Back to you, Dr. Roy.
Okay.
So there's no logic. There is no what a resonant frequency. No BS. It is just a simple thing. A photon, when it cannot interact with another photon, just with itself. But when it interacts with matter, it destroys itself and deposits its energy into that matter. Am I right? Interesting.
Well, you know, things are more complicated than that. You can get absorption, you can get reflection, you can get scatter, you can get a whole bunch of different things. So there's a whole bunch of different photon particle interactions possible.
No, you're absolutely right. The only thing is that I was not talking about mirror. I was not talking about internal reflection. I was not talking about refraction. I was talking about microwave and the food in the microwave. So everything that is there is that the space inside the microwave has to be small enough for the wave to pass from the walls and get to the food. And eventually that food is being heated by the photons, which is the energy of the wave that is transmitted in microwave. Interesting. A comment?
Yes, John recognized. I'll give it to you in a second. Keep in mind, microwaves are not perfect dispersers of energy, which is why our platters have to rotate. And if you've ever had your platter stuck, you know that there are hot spots and cold spots in the microwave cavity. John, what do you want to say?
Yeah, the heating is due to the fact that the water molecule tends to be polarized, and that because of the two hydrogen and oxygen, one side of the molecule is more positive and the other side is more negative. So the oscillating electric field transfers a lot of its vibration, causes that molecule to vibrate. And of course, vibration at the molecular level is heat. And the hot spots and cold spots is because you basically got a cavity that's going to have standing waves in it. So if you didn't rotate it where there's a crest of the standing wave, you're going to get a hot spot. Where there's a low level of the standing wave, you won't cook as fast. So to avoid that, they rotate it. Of course, now the more complex solution is to sweep the frequency. They have to make it more complex so they can keep the price high. Go ahead.
Yeah, the only thing is that mechanism is usually explained when we're talking about high power infrared and ultraviolet. So if you read that, exactly the same process which you described it to me.
AC2GS. John, you had a different way of describing what a dipole moment, but basically the water molecule has a dipole moment. It has a positive end, it has a negative end. As the electromagnetic waves fluctuate through it, it produces kinetic energy onto the molecule, shaking it up. Average kinetic energy is temperature, so the temperature goes up and you heat the water.
Yes, exactly, yep.
Yeah, we're all in agreement. Wesley, let me just kind of add something from the chat room. Alex, AD2DU, which is he's a regular here, he says, I would like to ask Wesley if he called in to Brian Lira on WNYC Friday night. I thought I heard him.
Yes, I was. Yes, I was. There was a question. The zoning has changed, and that was 2 days ago. No, that was Friday. Okay,
design has changed, and there was evening time Thursday, and now people will possibly be allowed, depends from their location, if they are not flooded area, to use their basement as apartment, because it's a shortage of the apartment. And people are allowed also to build 2 to 3 floors above their existing house. So zoning has changed, and the new rules immediately took place. The only thing is that probably there's not as clear as I'm talking to Dr. Leon.
Okay, nice to know. It's a shame we don't have a real estate net, but so hopefully Alex is, he says, I knew it. He recognized your voice. He's a regular little detective.
Yes, I introduced myself. So good news for some people who didn't know that. Now if you have a two-family house, you may have a three-family house, or actually two-family house with a basement. So if somebody has no problem flooding, I'm not sure if it's needed to apply for it or it's automatic. So basements are right now allowed to be additional apartments. And it's not only Manhattan, it is also in Queens and in Brooklyn and whatsoever. The next one, amplifier steady state versus a valve and pros and cons. So there was a video that made excellent explanation comparison between amplifier, which is another German one, but I love it. I would love to have it. A really one. So it's called RF Kit. It's RF2K-S, Radio Florida 2 Kilo-S. There is another one, Mercury Lux, which is made in USA. The video is slow talking, so I suggested Dr. Roy to read it in, to listen to it in the speed 1.2. I'm not sure if you had time to do it, Dr. Roy.
I think I listened to a bit of it, but it was about a week and a half ago, so you know, memory is not what it once was. Linear amplifiers are a great thing. I've mentioned before, I like my expert systems. Some people have come on and said that they know people who had problems with expert systems, and if you look it up, people have problems with everything, ultimately. Some people are lucky, some people are unlucky. I think at one point you mentioned in your email that the expert systems is the loudest. I don't know. It's not terribly loud, so it doesn't bother me personally. But different strokes for different folks. We kind of chatted a bit about linear amplifiers a month or so ago, and, not much has changed in a month. The future is going to be LDMOS solid-state technology. The power handling capability, the price will hopefully keep going down. Vacuum tubes, low-end vacuum tubes are difficult to source. High-end vacuum tubes, porcelain, ceramic, can be very expensive. If you need real high-end, high-power ceramic tubes, you're going to pay through the nose. So, I'm a big fan of linear amplifiers, and I particularly like solid state in that they tend to be efficient and lightweight and relatively small. I know people who bought old, powerful vacuum tube-based linear amplifiers that you basically need a bunch of guys to carry it. I could put mine on my, pick it up with my left arm and take it for a walk. So I really appreciate the benefits of solid state, but there'll be people out there that want to see tubes glowing in their boxes, and so to them I say, enjoy your vacuum tubes.
Comment.
Sandwich. For some reason, you're dropping out of the repeater. I don't know if it's a matter of lost packets or the signal is so strong it's kind of overwhelming the transmitter. I don't know, but I got about 50%. You're talking about new technology that's going to change the world of linear amplifiers even more. I'm trying to reconstruct it from the bits and pieces that I was able to hear.
Roy?
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry, in the same room with this repeater, so probably it was a little overpowering. My question was, are we seeing GaN, gallium nitride, make its way into consumer products yet, or ham radio products? Are there anything that we're seeing on the market for ham radio operators that are advertising GaN as the transistor technology?
Well, as far as I'm aware, the only major product that has already commercially benefited, and I own a few of them, are Woolworths. Power supplies, GaN technology has allowed Woolworths to supply 130, 140 watts of power and stay the size of a standard, maybe 15-watt Woolworth. So I have a lot of GaN products, but they seem to all be power supply related at this point. I don't know if it's going to extend to other aspects of amateur radio, but right now they're pushing them in power supplies. And it's a pleasure to have a small, you know, back in the old days, we all had laptops. The power supply to the laptop was not a Woolworth. It was a brick. And those days are gone, thankfully. There are companies that are selling cheap power supplies that are still bricks. But nowadays, you can cut it in size to ridiculous lengths.
Yeah, real good. You realize that, or you do not. GaN RF amplifiers are a real thing and are making their way into industry, and they're getting a lot more density. I'm pretty sure the project here to redesign the 805 megahertz amplifiers for the LAMP accelerator, pretty sure they're looking at that. Be a possible replacement. But yeah, they're out there. They're all over industry. I'm just wondering if they made it to ham radio RF stages yet. KC2SHO, that could be easier.
KC2GS. As far as I'm aware, not yet. Or they're keeping it very quiet for some strange reason. I know, I mean, if you go to Amazon and you just kind of search for power supplies, you know, USB power supply, they advertise it up, down, and all around. It's gallium nitride is all over the damn place. I have yet to see any ad copy on any manufacturer in the amateur radio zone that is even whispering about gallium nitride. So my guess would be that it's not really ready. You got to keep in mind, amateur radio tends to be very conservative. You know, the Japanese manufacturers are just now move it over to software-defined radio. It's been around for amateur radio operators maybe 15, 16 years. It's been around in the military for maybe 25 years. So I don't hold your breath. It'll probably come, but very, very slowly.
GAN development kits in. I think it was Infineon, maybe, one of those companies anyway, and we were going to work on some testing of those amplifiers, but unfortunately never got to see that little project come to fruition. But anyway, real cool. I was just curious. I'm not following the market since I don't really push much power here. I really have nothing over 100 watts, so I was curious if we were seeing that yet. Thanks, Roy. Back to you. EC2 GSK C2 SVL.
You're welcome, John. Yeah, I mean, thankfully, I've kind of probably annoyed more than one person. We live in a kind of golden age of technology. You know, if you sleep late, you're going to miss things. And so, there's still a lot of things yet to be discovered and innovated and. I look forward to all the new toys that I will get to play with in the coming years. And, I've been thrilled already by the ability that gallium nitride demonstrates just for power supply devices and such. So, I'm sure it'll make an impact elsewhere, and, I'll read about it, and I'll probably invest in a couple of bleeding-edge electronic items to play with it myself, but thank you for bringing it up. It's infrequently that we actually discuss gallium nitride or any of the semiconductor materials that have made the world so fascinating, to me at least. Anyway, thanks, John, as always. Leslie?
Okay. It's the problem, then I'm gonna go, let's move this to power. Okay, I think now. 1, 2, 1, 2, 1. Okay, so, JRF kit is good because, it is more silent than your computer. You cannot hear. So they use a number of phones, and those phones are simply very quiet. And that's why I want it. And apart from that, you can have that amplifier at the other side of the house connected to your local area network, and your console is connected to a local area network, or your computer could have an app that is connected to it, and then you can have that amplifier operated. So the model number is RF Kit RF2K-S, and when you place your order in here in few places, they are authorized to it. Then from Germany, that amplifier is going to be sent, but you have to wait 2 to 3 weeks in order for them to make that amplifier. It costs $5,300 right now, about that. And if we compare it to Mercury, which is the American made by KM3KM, that one is $4,300. It is full 2 kilowatt power, but it is advertised as 1.5 kilowatt power, talking about the German one. And to XGA.
Okay. I mean, like I said, there's a lot of, fortunately, a lot of nice solid-state linear amplifiers. My Expert Systems, I think Flex Radio sells a solid-state linear amplifier, And there's a couple other companies that sell solid-state amplifiers. I think the other American radio company sells a, linear amplifier. So there's a lot of them on the market. And a lot of them are software-controllable. My expert systems I can control by my computer. So, you know, that's not a novelty. At this point, it's kind of expected in modern-day electronics. So a lot of good options out there, but caveat emptor, let the buyer beware.
Okay, a few characteristics. Frequency range 1.8 to 54 megahertz, all amateur bands. 1500 watt, because they say it's 1500 watt, but I saw in the video it went to 1.9 kilowatt. Then it's very silent operation, is frequency sensing. So in other words, you don't have to switch the band. It by itself has recognized the frequency, and it has tuners built in. So you don't have to have additional tuner in it. Internal automatic antenna tuner is with unlimited number of memories is there. 7-inch color touch screen. So you can, and the operation is quite easy. The RS-485 for Cat5, Cat6, whatever you have for your network to connect to your network. And the amplifier, even though that is quiet, could be in another house or another part of the house, as long as it is within the same area code. I'm sorry, if that's what I'm talking. As long as it is with the same local area network. Yes. But as far as the amplifier, there was one guy who was trying to connect that amplifier in his radio club, and his radio station, which is the transceiver, was at his house. And he wasn't successful, but he knows how to do it. That's what he said. Back to you, Dr. Wood.
Okay, again, this is, you know, if you would have said this 15 years ago, you would have gotten oohs and ahs from everyone. I run my radio through my iPad. I could do it locally. I could do it not locally if I have a good Wi-Fi connection. That's the 21st century for you.
Yes. The only thing is that if we're talking about radio being in your house and amplifying being in your radio club, and you have a 10 miles or 20 miles the distance in between, and that what the guy said, he knows how to do it. Of course, I didn't see it in action. That is something.
Okay, but, you know, that's a weird design for a linear amplifier, and usually doesn't seem to me, at least, make much sense. Because the whole point of remote operation is you put everything in a remote operation that's capable of maintaining an antenna and everything else. Why would you have a radio in one building and a linear amplifier in another building? Then you need an extra circuit to basically, the way everyone, almost everyone, does it is drive the linear amplifier with the transmitter, the driver on the transmitter of the radio. So you need a coax, you need a transmission line. In this case, you're not really getting a RF driver that's getting amplified. You're basically just digitizing the audio component and sending the audio into a whole different transmitter that happens to be capable of 2,000 watts. So it's not really a linear amplifier under those circumstances. It's a transmitter.
Well, the biggest problem of most of the ham radio operators was that the antenna was and the feeder was at the location where the radio was not inconvenient to be inside the house. So if you have local area network or wide area network, and you are able to use those networks in order for you to have a comfort of transmission and connecting antennas. So let's say there is a student in some small room somewhere in some city, and the school allows him to use their antennas. Now he says, you know what, guys, I have the amplifier to kilowatt, I can share it with you. So now he can use his radio, connect to local area network, through local area network to wide area network, and then to his amplifier that is at school.
Again, to me, it's a transmitter. It's not a linear amplifier anymore. It's a gadget. It's a novelty. I don't think they're going to sell more than three amplifiers based upon that need. I think they're trying to solve a problem that doesn't really exist. I don't think anyone out there has a situation where they would like to place their radio upstate, but they would like to put their transmitter and their antenna in their house. And so they do that. I don't know. Again, doesn't quite make any kind of I would see no need for that personally. Maybe there's a whole bunch of people who are desperate for it personally, but to me it seems like a cute thing to show off that has very little practicality in the real world.
Yeah, the new ICOM also that was, it is being sold right now, I believe. So that was 2 weeks ago when I was talking about it. And now it's the 200 watt station with removable touch, not touch pad, but front panel. It's not removable, it's like the amplifier 200 watt with the rest of the body. All the transceiver is in one box, pretty heavy, and just your console is somewhere. And also, this console is able to act through local area network or wide area network, up to your choice. But of course, I don't have it, so I cannot claim that it's true. Back to you.
Okay, I mean, control surfaces that are based on Ethernet connections, again, are not new. My Flex radio did it when I first bought it 10-plus years ago. So, yeah, okay, Ethernet. Gotta love it.
Okay, that was a week ago. And a week ago, I thought I'm going to be talking on the TechNet, and there was a news. Is this Saturday, so that was last Saturday, no more Russia and Belarus in CERN. CERN expelled 500 Russian scientists from November 30th. But the actual bye-bye was said last Saturday. So in response to Russian aggression invasion of Ukraine, the CERN Council decided in June 22 already to end cooperation with Russia and its ally, Belarus. This measure will enter into force on November 30th, Moscow time, and has already been in force since June 27th for Belarus. There was the European Organization for Nuclear Research, CERN, that cut a cooperation with 500 Russians and Russian institutions. So they are no longer allowed to get the visas, no longer get allowed to come to CERN. Okay, so what they decided is, some of them decided to affiliate themselves with some other universities or scientific institutions or labs in Europe in order just to stay there. So some of them were pushed, or some of them were paid just to stay there and eventually try to rejoin CERN. Back to you, Dr. Ray.
Okay, I mean, I understand what's going on, unfortunately. Got to tighten the screws. Vladimirovich is going to hold on tight. But, you know, I would have thought that actually they would end up going to some technical center in China. That's their new friend. So, you know, I hope this comes to an end soon for the benefit of the Ukrainians. But, we live in dangerous times. You know, everything's kind of falling apart. Syria.